So I request you to lower your expectations as much as possible so that you won't be severely disappointed. I've tried to see how the different talks are related to one another, to put them into some categories, to look for a unifying theme. And it seems to me there is one unifying theme that I was able to identify, which accounts for most of the talks, I would say the vast majority of the talks. I lost my pointer. Where did I put it? Oh, here it is. Okay. And that's D-brains. One way or another, a lot of the topics are related to D-brains. Now, there were some talks not directly related to D-brains that, for the most part, were more speculative and introduced what I would call new directions. And so what I plan to do is to first mention them briefly. Everything will be brief, of course. And then turn to the other topics, which are ones that I think are related to D-brains. So I'm going to have to go quickly. And, well, I won't make lots of apologies, you understand. So one of these new directions was Petr Horjava's talk on de Sitter entropy and string theory. And he observes that since our universe seems to have lambda positive, it would be nice to see whether this is possible in string theory. And the approach he was pursuing was to notice that for an inertial observer, the space-time is static. There's a conserved de Sitter energy you can define, so you can identify some Hamiltonian, which you could try to use to define the quantum theory. And there are some indications that there should be a finite number of degrees of freedom, which is an interesting fact, which would be associated with the cosmological horizon. So I think this is a direction to explore. I don't think there are any definitive final results here. Another very speculative talk, which I've thought about myself a little bit, is a subject introduced by Chris Hull, which he called strongly coupled limit of M theory and conformal invariance. And his idea is that if one starts with M theory compactified on a torus down to five dimensions and considers a limit in which the five-dimensional Planck length goes to infinity, or equivalently a high energy limit, that there may be a conformally invariant theory in six dimensions. So roughly speaking, that this L Planck can be interpreted as the radius of some sixth dimension. And that in the limit where that circle decompactifies, that you end up with a six-dimensional theory with 4, 0 supersymmetry in the six-dimensional sense. If this is correct, it's a very bizarre kind of theory that you obtain in the limit. In addition to the 32 linearly realized supersymmetry, since it's becoming conformal, there'd be 32 additional non-linearly realized supersymmetries, so altogether it'd be 64 supersymmetries, which is something we've never seen before, which would fit together into this supergroup. The u-duality group that one has in five dimensions should persist in six dimensions. However, what was the metric in five dimensions turns into some peculiar self-dual field in six dimensions, so you don't have conventional geometry anymore. And that's one of the many things that makes it difficult to think about this proposal. So I kind of alternate on even number days, I think it's right, and odd number days, I think it's wrong. And maybe we should submit it to the Supreme Court, since they like to settle things on which they have no business. Okay.
So another interesting talk was Rousseau's talk on M-theory at finite temperature. He was able to compute the one-loop free energy in M-theory, which is surprising that he was able to get a finite answer. And he showed that he was able to get that there's a Hagedorn transition at some constant times the 11-dimensional Planck scale. And then furthermore, by compactifying in a circle, this connected smoothly to the known Hagedorn transition that you have in the 2A theory.
He indicated that this result should have some implications for the microscopic degrees of freedom, but I didn't hear him say what those implications are.
Stephen Hawking gave a talk entitled ADS-CFT in Cosmology. It's based on an idea called trace anomaly-driven inflation. And the idea is that if there are, in this sufficiently early universe, if there are enough fields, then there can be some kind of instant time which is large compared to the Planck scale, and where you get some kind of de Sitter geometry on the boundary of a five-dimensional region. It wasn't clear that the five-dimensional region was important for him. In any case, this de Sitter story has an instability which he suggested could trigger inflation. He talked about benign ghosts,
something I'm skeptical about.
Kazakov and Kutuzov talked about a matrix model of the 2D black hole. Actually, Kutuzov also talked about other things, but as you know, that was today. And so it should be fresh in your mind, so I won't remind you of everything he said. Anyway, in Kazakov's talk, he used the old matrix model of the 2D bosonic string theory to analyze what was called the cigar geometry, which corresponds to Euclidean two-dimensional black hole. And the key ingredient that they discovered is an equivalence between this coset model that Witten had introduced and a Sein-Liouville model. And they showed that when you compactify one dimension on a circle, that there are vortices that enter via twisted periodic boundary conditions, and that
There's some interesting mathematical connections with other subjects, and there's a lot you can do explicitly. Ed Witten's talk was entitled Quantum Gravity in De Sitter Space.
He pointed out that there's no positive conserved energy in De Sitter space, and therefore supersymmetry can't be realized as an unbroken symmetry. He reminded us of this interesting relation proposed by Tom Banks and others that he interpreted as suggesting that general relativity cannot be quantized and needs to arise from a more fundamental theory.
He observed that the only asymptotic regions that exist in the De Sitter geometry are asymptotic plus and minus infinity in the time directions.
And so the only gauge invariant observables you can define are overlaps between initial and final configurations.
He reminded us of an old observation of Dyson that says that if we really do have asymptotic De Sitter cosmology, that our future fate is very unpleasant. And this is some philosophical objection, I believe, to this idea. And therefore,
he was motivated to consider the possibility that the fundamental cosmological constant might really be zero, and that what we're seeing is some sort of quintessence, as has been discussed by various astrophysicists. One possibility in string theory would be a slowly varying dilaton, but since this has gravitational strength couplings, there are very severe constraints on that.
Another possibility, which seems quite intriguing, is that it might be an
axion-like field that is rolling, which would have some periodic potential, and maybe since that's much more weakly coupled to ordinary stuff, that might be a better direction to pursue.
So let me now turn to my D-brain topics. Those were the new directions, and I'll put the list of them over here. I thought I needed 7, but one topic didn't appear very much, so I cut it down to 6. So some of these connections are a little bit loose, and I'm taking some liberties, and talks that I put into one category really bridge several categories. So all of this is some crude approximation to the truth,
for which you'll, I hope, forgive me. So anyway, the three really major topics in this conference, I would say, were ADS-CFT duality, which is still a thriving subject in its generalizations, unstable systems and tachyon condensation, and non-commutative field theory and string theories. And as you know, there are all sorts of connections between these three subjects. Other topics that were discussed by fewer speakers were D-brain effective actions, D-brains wrapped on Calabi-Yau's, and brain worlds in large extra dimensions. An obvious remark is that even though this was a relatively small topic at this conference, there is a large segment of the theoretical physics community that works on it, and so it's a major topic at other conferences. So the first one. I'm going to be very quick because otherwise this will take too long. Miriam Svetich discussed brain resolution and Ricci flat metrics. And the interesting idea was that one could avoid, she wanted supergravity solutions with n equal 2 supersymmetry in 5 dimensions, which could be duals of n equal 1 in 4 dimensions for large n field theories. And she was able to get non-singular solutions by adding suitable additional fluxes. And so she referred to this singularity resolution as resolution via transgression.
Hermann Verlinde listed various challenges
for string theory and holography, and gave a wish list, which I won't write down the whole list here. one of the items on his list was he would like to see a microscopic derivation of the holographic renormalization group equations. Steve Gupser talked on two topics. The first was that he proposed that the Gregory-Laflamme instability occurs whenever there's thermodynamic instability, so that it's really a classical process, not a tunneling process. And he illustrated this with a near-extremal spinning brain. Then he shifted gears and talked about the Stanford D-brain model for fractional quantum Hall state and concluded that it was plausible that they land in the correct phase, at least for some range of the filling fraction. David Gross described some very interesting work he did with Nadav Drucker, in which appears to give an exact prediction for N equal 4 superyang mills, and which can be compared with string theory, and so actually tests some of the stringy effects in the ADS-CFT duality. And here's his formula. I won't tell you what the symbols are. In any case, the idea was that that a circular BPS-Wilson loop is conformally equivalent to a straight line, which has Wilson line just equal to 1. And so there's a conformal anomaly at the point on the circle that maps to infinity, and this is entirely responsible for the result. And he was able to evaluate it using matrix model methods. He also showed that the dual string theory agrees with this result to the extent he could analyze it, which is to leading order in alpha prime in all orders in 1 over n squared. So it isn't stringy, but it's loopy. Mike Green talked about connections between large N superyang mills and string theory. He gave a lightning review of his derivation of r to the fourth and lambda 16th terms and the string effective action. And then he proposed generalizing Gross's analysis to instanton backgrounds. And it wasn't clear to me from what he said whether one expects a non-zero result or not for these corrections. Now you see what's happening as I got tired last night. So Narine talked about D1, D5 systems in theories with 16th supercharges. Givian talked about superstrings in ADS3, where there are all sorts of interesting phenomena associated with long strings and so on, which were pioneered by Oguri and Maldacena. And Amanda Pete talked about singularity resolution. So she explored where the tension of a brain probe vanishes in a certain N equal 2 flow geometry that was introduced by Pilch and Warner, and interpreted that locus as what she calls an enhanceon, which is where new modes become massless and there's some gauge symmetry enhancement. Nick Dory gave exact results on this N equal 1 star super Yang Mills and its string dual. And the motivation here was that if one wants to understand the physics of a confining gauge theory from some ADS-CFT story, it's difficult because we only know how to use supergravity to compute when the Itauf parameter is large. But if lambda, the Itauf parameter, is large, then the QCD scale and the cutoff are comparable. And what one really needs to make realistic contact with the confining gauge theory is this hierarchy. So his proposal was to compute the exact lambda dependence of various holomorphic quantities and thereby use it to make predictions of what the stringy corrections to supergravity should be. And he seems to have made a lot of progress along these lines. Igor Klemenov talked about a supergravity dual of a confining, I think he's had cascading first, cascading confining gauge theory. This is beautiful work with Strassler and other collaborators, which I can't do justice to. What it does is to give a supergravity dual of certain Seiberg dualities in N equal 1 gauge theories. And he has this infinite cascade where you have these M fractional D3 brains that can be interpreted as D5 brains wrapping a collapsed sphere. And then there's this, as you increase the energy scale, you get to bigger and bigger gauge groups. Or if you decrease it, you get to smaller and smaller ones.
So it's very interesting.
Skomaris talked about brain dynamics and conformal field theory backgrounds, focused mostly on brains in SU2 level K theory. Bacchus gave a closely related talk in which he talked about D brains in an SL2R Wessel-Mino model. And an important ingredient in both these things, which I don't know much about, is called twined conjugacy classes.
I got the impression that these are conjugacy classes that involve outer automorphisms.
So the second D-brain topic was unstable systems and tachyon condensation.
So that, in terms of population, number of speakers,
the first topic was the most. And so the second topic is, I guess, the next most.
And Per Kraus described the background string field theory approach to the analysis of the DD bar system. This is in this paper with Larson that I alluded to earlier. And he gave a very clear explanation of how to do these things about using bulk wave functionals, the Quillen superconnection, boundary fermions, the Tia Bot-Shapiro construction of solitons, et cetera, et cetera.
I can't do this justice, of course.
Barton Zwieback described tachyon dynamics in open string field theory. And he just, because, first of all, the certain successful guesses that he had made for the tachyon effective potential and work he did with Minahan. And then he described an attempt to guess the true vacuum. Having shown he was very good at guessing, he tried to guess the true vacuum of the cubic bosonic string field theory as some expression made out of the ghost fields only. And so an example of the kind of thing he had in mind would be to have the BARST charge just be C0, which is trivial cohomology and would represent the fact that at the true vacuum, there were no dynamically propagating open string states.
Ashok Sen discussed lump solutions in this same setup, and he used the above to actually compute endpoint Green's functions, which he was able to compute up to overall normalizations. And he said if these normalization factors grow with n in a suitable manner, then there will be branch points in terms of a certain parameter that comes into this effective action varied with respect to a source. And with this assumption, he could compute tension ratios for lump solutions and found agreement, remarkably, with lower dimensional D-brains. So this agreement, I think, is some evidence that the various assumptions that went into this analysis could well be correct. Waddy Taylor talked about gauge invariance and tachyon condensation in open string field theory. He emphasized the fact that in open string field theory, when you work in Siegel gauge, you only find the tachyon potential for a certain region, and then you run into some bizarre branch points. He interpreted these branch points as due to the breakdown of this Feynman-Siegel gauge and gave some pretty compelling evidence that that's the correct interpretation. Samson Shadashvili talked about the field theory of open strings in the background string field theory approach, tachyon condensation in closed strings. He described how to get the exact tachyon potential, so they confirmed Zwieback's guess, and then also discussed the addition of gauge fields. He gave some evidence that open strings disappear at the true minimum and at that point that the closed strings become dynamical, even though they weren't put in originally as being dynamical. Topic three, non-commutative gauge theory and string theory. So I lumped three talks here together. I won't mention much of what Jeff said, since that should be fresh in your memory. Anyway, these authors talked about non-commutative solitons for D-brains in bosonic string theory. And these were described as solitons in non-commutative field theories. So the first case is just looking at a scalar field theory of a so-called tachyon in 2 plus 1 dimensions, where you have non-commutative space in the two spatial directions. And then the argument was that there are solitons that describe a codimension 2 D-brain, at least whose tension can be computed exactly in the limit when the non-commutativity parameter theta goes to infinity. And then we heard about this remarkable fact that you can do better than this and get exact results for finite theta if you go to a non-commutative U1 gauge theory and not just a scalar field theory. And in that case, you can obtain exact solutions that look almost like gauge transformations of a trivial vacuum but aren't quite gauge transformations because these aren't exactly unitary operators, rather these shift operators that Jeff was describing again this morning. So in particular, this kind of configuration would describe MD0 brains on top of a D2 brain. This gentleman with a name I can't pronounce discussed Ramon-Ramon couplings of non-commutative brains. And I think these are non-commutative analogs of the non-abelian D-brain formulas of Myers.
Shumit Das talked about
bulk coupling to non-commutative brains, and Hiroshi Oguri gave a closely related talk on how non-commutative gauge theories couple to gravity.
So these two talks show that the gauge invariant operators that couple to bulk fields involve straight Wilson lines,
and Oguri in particular showed that the energy momentum tensor, which is the gauge invariant operator that the graviton couples to, starts actually at a lower power of alpha prime in the non-commutative theory than in the commutative one, so it's alpha prime going to zero limit, it's theta going to zero limit, isn't the commutative result. And he also discussed the dual gravitational description.
Kitazawa talked about Wilson lines and non-commutative gauge theories also, but he constructed them in a different way, namely as formal large N limits of matrix models. Sujong Ray talked about classical and planar limits of non-commutative vacua
in solitons. And what he was interested in was quantum corrections to the GMS solitons. And he pointed out that whereas in the original GMS construction, only the extrema of the tachyon potential were relevant, that when you go to quantum corrections, the vicinity of the extrema enter into the formulas, even in the theta going to infinity limit.
Gautam Mandal
talked about the matrix model, non-commutative gauge theory, and brain anti-brain systems. So he used the BFSS matrix model, which would have been this topic 5 that I crossed out, and demonstrated it to be very effective for the purposes of this kind of analysis.
So let me turn now to topic
4, D-brain effective actions. So Rob Myers talked about what he called fuzzy funnels, non-abelian brain intersections. So the idea is you have some D-brain configuration that he drew this way, which can be interpreted as some D-string ending on a D2N plus 1 brain, and where you have a certain number of strings and a certain number of P2N plus 1 brains. And he had two ways of understanding this configuration. One in terms of the world volume theory of the strings, and the other in terms of the world volume theory of the 2n plus 1 brains. So in terms of the strings, the crucial thing, was his effect, which shows the growth of these extra dimensions. So
I guess I'll leave it at that.
Sandeep Trivedi talked about magnetic brains and giant gravitons. So this was a magnetic analog of Myers' dielectric effect, which had the consequence that objects moving in a magnetic field grow in transverse directions with a radius that's proportional to velocity.
So this is very closely related to the Myers effect.
Ghoshal discussed the normalization of the BSFT action. This is very important, because Shadashvili and others whom I haven't mentioned because they didn't speak here, computed structure of the potential, of the tachyon potential, but didn't do the overall normalization. And for testing Sen's conjectures, you need that normalization. And Ghoshal and Sen did that.
And it works, of course. And I gave you some comments on Born infill theory. We're getting there. Number 6. D-brains wrapped on Calabi-Yau and other manifolds.
Kentaro Hori talked about mirror symmetry and its applications, interesting maps between symplectic structures and analytic or algebraic structures, and wrapped D-brains that are called A-brains, mapping into ones that are called B-brains.
A lot of fancy math here, which I don't understand very well.
And Govindarajan talked about D-brains and vector bundles on Calabi-Yau manifolds, introduced something he called a helix,
which I won't attempt to explain.
Mike Douglas talked about D-brains on Calabi-Yau manifolds and emphasized that this is a good source of making four-dimensional n equal 1 theories, that the B-brains are related to Kontsevich's derived categories, and that topological D-brains in the setup have more structure in them that can be understood using this fancy math than you would get just from K-theory. So even though I can't claim to have understood what he said, it was pretty clear that he had some powerful methods. Majumdar talked about non-BPS D-brains on Calabi-Yau manifolds. And he was able to track down lines of marginal stability by looking for tachyon modes in various open strings,
and to identify the phase structure that results in certain setups. Final topic. Brain worlds in large dimensions. As I said earlier, this is a big subject, but we only got a taste of it at this conference. But we got a taste from the people who do it in a responsible manner. So Ignatius Antoniadis talked about string physics at low energies and discussed a type 1 realization of a low-scale string models. And he also gave an alternative approach based on NS5 brains in type 2. Ibanez talked about intersecting brain worlds,
where his scheme was to consider compactifying six dimensions in this way, and then to wrap one dimension of the D4 brain on the two torus. And since you can do this with various D4 brains, depending on what cycle of the two torus you pick, you'll get various numbers of crossings. And since the four-dimensional particles live, so to speak, at the crossings, but according to how you wrap these things, you can get multiple families. So I found that idea very interesting, since this is kind of thing I'm very sympathetic with. His scheme had no supersymmetry or unification. I'm less sympathetic with that. And there may have been some tachyon problems.
Of course, you want to get the standard Higgs effect, but he may have been getting more than that.
Katru and Silverstein discussed their recent work with a number of collaborators on tunneling-mediated supersymmetry breaking, multi-brain constructions, et cetera, et cetera. The basic idea is to consider this setup introduced by Hermann Verlinde, where you take F-theory on Calabi-Yau with a topology that requires a large number of D3 brains, but a finite number, and suppose that they are placed into two clusters. And they, in each case, they form some ADS-like throat of the geometry. And so we would have some approximate ADS description in these two regions. And the idea is that we live on this set of brains, and there's some hidden set of brains over here where supersymmetry is broken by some standard dynamical mechanism. And now transmitting that over to our world might be a little different than in other schemes of this kind, because you can set it up so that this happens at a lower scale than the gravity scale. And as best I could understand, the phenomenology of this still remains to be explored. So what are the conclusions of all this? Lots of interesting results. I don't think there are any dramatic breakthroughs, as far as I could tell, but there's certainly the results on unstable systems and the exact results there are very intriguing, and also all these things are intriguing. So they're important results, but not things as dramatic as, say, the original ADS-CFT proposal. There are still big unsolved problems that were listed by David Gross at the last strings conference, and I believe that all of them remain unsolved, so I won't repeat them. And finally, let me apologize to all speakers whose contributions were either omitted or misrepresented in this presentation. It's inevitable that I did some of both. And finally, let me thank once again the organizers, Atish Dabulkar, Sunil Mukhi, Smita Wadia, and say I hope to see all of you at Strings 2002 in July 2002 in Cambridge, England. Thank you.